quid of Pemaquid, we're permanently cute. We've got so many tentacles, we don't know what to do. But if we had some boots, then we'd be fancy as could be. Just like all the fishermen that sail upon the sea.
So if you are a sailor, better lace your boots up tight. And watch out for the tentacles that reach out in the night. Cause we're the squid of Pemaquid, and this is what we do. We tickle all the fishermen and try to steal their shoes. We're the squid of Pemaquid, we're permanently cute. We lie beneath the ocean and dream of fancy boots. Cause we're the squid of Pemaquid, and that's just what we do. We'd all be fancy gentlemen if only we had shoes.
That was James Kochalka, Superstar, right here on the Children's Hour. Over the break, you heard the Little Apple Band with Squid Was 11, and Baby Butterfly Bobtail Squid is Claudia Robin Gunn with her Sing for the Sea, Little Wild Ocean Friends. You're listening to the Children's Hour. Our guest is Dr. Sarah McAnulty. She is a cephalopod expert. That's somebody who knows so much about squid and squids. There are a lot of photos that you can find at childrenshour.org under this episode, Squids, including a learn-along guide. Let's go to Illy.
Where do squid live?
Squid live anywhere pretty much that is marine. So that means in the ocean. No squid live in freshwater. So you're not going to find squid in a lake or a river or a stream or a creek. You're only going to find them in oceans and bays, that sort of thing. There are so many different types of squid, and squid live in so many different habitats and have so many different adaptations that they can kind of go wherever. They're really, really good. And they've been around for an incredibly long time. There have been cephalopods. So cephalopods are the group that contains squid, octopus, cuttlefish, and then this weirdo called the nautilus that still lives in a shell. They've been around for longer than we've had trees on Earth. So they've had a really, really long time to take up space within the ocean and get different from each other over evolutionary time.
Are you talking like 500 million years ago?
500 million years ago. So squid, very, very old.
So they've been around since then. Have they changed very much? Because you talked about a nautilus, and I think as I look at a picture of a nautilus, I see those as fossils too. So that must be a very successful type of organism.
Totally. So cephalopods, when they first arose, this was again like 500 million years ago, they kind of looked like a traffic cone with a face sticking out the bottom. They didn't look like the squid that we have today at all. And cephalopods didn't lose their shell until much, much later. So there were like hundreds of millions of years where animals that were closely related to squid, instead of looking like the little torpedoes we have today, looked pretty similar to that, but with a shell on the outside, with a little face sticking out. And then over time, those shells kind of got brought indoors. So kind of like our skeletons, but for them, it's a shell. But they still have these like really big, heavy shells inside of their bodies. And then over time, those got smaller and smaller and smaller, just like our ancestors had tails. And we don't have tails anymore, but we have that little like tailbone. So there's this like little whisper of our evolutionary history. And it's the same thing with squid. They have like a little whisper, like the tailbone version of a big shell.
Mm.
How do squids make ink?
Squid house a bunch of pigment. So that's like the black stuff within the ink in something called an ink sac. So it just looks like a little bag that they fill to the brim with melanin, which is very similar to the like the brown in my freckles and the brown in all sorts of human skin. So they store it in there. And then when they're ready to shoot some ink out, they basically just like shoot it out their siphon. There's like a little tube that connects the bag of ink to right under their faces. So like if I'm a squid and my arms are right in front of my face, there's like a little siphon funnel right under my face and they just shoot it right out that hole.
Why do they do that?
Squid can make ink for a lot of different reasons. So the main one is to confuse predators and get away. And there's two main ways they do that. They can kind of make like a smoke bomb, like a big, big, big ink cloud so that nobody can see anything and they can get away. The other approach is called a pseudomorph. Pseudo means fake, morph means body kind of. So they will mix mucus, so like snot, into the ink and then they shoot out a blob. So instead of the ink dissipating everywhere, it stays together in a little clump. And that way they can plop out a blob that's about the same size and shape as them so that if like a barracuda is chasing them, instead of having one little squid to chase, suddenly they have like 8 squid to choose between, but only one of them is a squid. The rest are just ink blobs.
Wow.
How intelligent are squids?
Oh, what a good question. And it's something that scientists struggle with all the time because comparing animal intelligence is really, really hard to do. We get the sense that squid probably are smarter than a clam or a mussel or, you know, maybe a crab because they engage in these relatively complex social behaviors like talking to each other and working together on something sometimes, living together, certainly. But it's really hard to like rank, like this is the most smart animal. This is the next most smart animal. It's like amorphous, tough to nail down. But generally speaking, yeah, squid we think are reasonably smart.
We've heard stories about things like squid finding their way out of a lab through a drain and back to the ocean. Is that a rare thing? That seems pretty brilliant.
Yeah. So the octopuses are more commonly escaping. And that's because octopuses are generally squishier than squid are. So squid and cuttlefish in particular, have like a pretty big internal shell. It's basically the same size as their back. So they can't fit through tiny little holes. They're stuck where they are. Squid are just generally less wishable because of the way that their muscles kind of are, and also because of that internal shell, the pen, we call it. And so they can't squeeze through stuff as easily.
We're talking with Dr. Sarah McAnulty. She is a squid biologist. She's also the founder of Skype a Scientist. You're listening to the Children's Hour, recorded at the Outpost Performance Space and on Zoom. We're here in Albuquerque, New Mexico. This next band is from New Zealand. It's the Itty Bitty Beats, right here on the Children's Hour.
Every brand new
You're listening to the Children's Hour. Today on the show, we're learning about squid and a bit about cephalopods in general. And for you to learn even more, you can print out our learn-along guide for this episode. Follow along with the show, get a lot more information and a lot more context. Our learn-along guides are fun for all ages, and they meet educational standards and allow the Children's Hour to be used inside the classroom. Look for this episode, Squids, at childrenshour.org and tell a teacher. We're at the Outpost Performance Space and on Zoom with Skype a scientist, Dr. Sarah McAnulty. Dr. McAnulty, I have to ask you about eating squid because, for one thing, humans love their calamari. Is that squid? Are we eating the tentacles? What are we eating there?
Calamari is a mix of the arms and the mantle. So the mantle is like their torso. And so, yeah, it's both. If it's like the rings, then that is their torso, basically. Yeah, their mantle.
It's pretty delicious, but is it a sustainable type of food to eat?
Generally, compared to most fish, yes. But whenever we're talking about seafood, it's so complicated and it depends on so many different things. So what I generally suggest is like just listening to whatever the heck the Monterey Bay Aquarium has to say about it. They have a little guide that you can check out because there are going to be populations, some places, like particularly of cuttlefish and octopus, where it's going to be less sustainable, and then other places where it's like totally fine. But as the ocean gets warmer, that is likely to change. And so I wouldn't say forever and ever squid are going to be a sustainable seafood, but right now they're a better choice than, say, a tuna.
What about climate change in squid? What have you seen?
Ooh. So if the year was 2016, I would be telling you that squid are doing great. Cephalopods are doing wonderful. They're seeming to do better lately. But we're realizing that as waters get warmer and warmer, the areas that they can be happy in are shrinking. So every squid and cuttlefish and octopus species has a range of temperatures that they're happy at. And as the oceans get warmer, the areas that they're happy in shrink and shrink and shrink. And so that's the biggest threat right now to squid, is just things getting hotter. Certainly the whole ecosystem collapsing is also part of that. And some squid may just move. They might just go north or find another place to live and be totally fine. But there are so many different types of squid and so many different places they live that hopefully some of them survive, but we're probably going to lose some species, just like we're losing every other type of animal, at least some of the species, because of climate change.
So sad.
What is it about squid you find the most fascinating?
I think the like color change to communicate, and also that they're like quite social, but they've developed that social kind of behavior completely independently of us. Because when like we split from them on like the tree of life, it was a long, long time ago, like over 600 million years ago. And so you can kind of look at an animal and see how it does things similar to us. And then also doing similar things like totally differently from us. And that's really fun. It's like just seeing how another path could have gone for evolution.
Sometimes old timey books show pictures of a giant squid grabbing a ship and taking it down to the bottom of the ocean.
Uh-huh.
That's not real, is it?
So the big, big, big octopus, like we don't know of any big octopuses that can take down a ship. For sure. But there are pretty big squid. And could they take down one of these like huge sailing ships that like cross the Atlantic? No, they're not big enough for that. But we think that the source of a lot of those mythologies are giant squid, because when giant squid are feeling sick, when they're approaching death, their ability to stay where they want to be in the water, what's called their buoyancy, gets all out of whack. And so they end up floating to the surface of the seawater kind of by accident because they're sick. And so when you have like a dying, disoriented giant squid and you're in a small boat and you encounter one, that's pretty scary because they are really big compared to a small boat and certainly compared to humans. And then we end up with pictures in books of the Kraken.
Oh, yes. And that's what it looks like.
Yeah.
All right. This is a random question that me and my friend argued about. Could a squid survive in space?
Oh, yeah. We've sent a squid to space, actually. Yes. So could a squid survive in space? Yes. Squid were sent to space specifically to understand how bacteria establish relationships with animals broadly. And so squid are a model for understanding that. And we sent them to space to see how they would form a partnership with bacteria in weirdo gravity, what we call microgravity, which is what animals experience in space. And if we were to ever, as humans, live in space for multiple generations, we would need to know how this works. Because if we want to have children in space, we need to make sure that their bacteria is healthy, because bacteria keep our bodies healthy. And so that was why we sent them to space. And they certainly survived for part of that time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Squids in space. That's hard to believe. You've been hearing Dr. Sarah McAnulty. She is a squid biologist and also the founder of Skype a Scientist. Sarah, will you talk a little bit about Skype a Scientist? What is it?
Yeah, Skype a Scientist is a program that aims to connect people directly with the source of information via scientists. We will match any classroom, scout troop, library, group of friends, a book club, whatever. If you're a group, we will match you with a scientist of your interest. So if you really like spiders, we'll match you with a spider scientist. If you really like space, we'll match you with an astrophysicist or something like that. So you can sign up totally for free at skypeascientist.com. These are all about Q&As, because we want to start conversations between scientists and everybody else. So we want to make that as easy as possible for folks to do. We also run live streams where you can tune in, ask your questions of a scientist live if you don't want to set up your own group. Skypeascientist.com, free connections for Q&As with scientists.
That's so cool. Dr. Sarah McAnulty, we've learned so much from you today on the Children's Hour, much more than anyone knew about squids around the world. Thank you so much for being with us on the Children's Hour.
Yeah, of course. Happy to be here.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Bye. One, two, three.
Squiddly-dilly-doo-dah-doo-dah-dee. My old friend King Squid grabbed a donut in here. Yes, indeed, that's what he did. My old friend King Squid, squiddly dilly doo da doo da day. My old friend King Squid opened the cookie jar lid, grabbed the donut in here. Yes, indeed, that's what he did. My old friend King Squid, squiddly dilly doo da doo da day, squiddly dilly doo da doo da day. My old friend King Squid,
yeah,
tickled the neighbor kid, opened the cookie jar lid, grabbed the donut in here.
That's right.
Yes, indeed, that's what he did. My old friend King Squid, squiddly lily doo da doo da day, squiddly lily doo da doo da day, squiddly lily doo da doo da day.
Listening to the Children's Hour, Kids Public Radio. We'll be right back.
Many thanks to the Outpost Performance Space for hosting the Children's Hour. The Children's Hour is supported by United Way of North Central New Mexico. Support for the Children's Hour provided by New Mexico Arts, a division of the New Mexico Department of Cultural Affairs, and by the National Endowment for the Arts. Support for the Children's Hour provided by the City of Albuquerque Cultural Services Department and the Urban Enhancement Trust Fund. Support for the Children's Hour provided by the New Mexico Children's Foundation. You can keep up with the Children's Hour by signing up for our monthly newsletter at childrenshour.org.
I like all of the podcasts because they help me learn a lot. I'm Brooklyn Elder from Albuquerque.
Find hundreds of educational podcasts at childrenshour.org or anywhere you listen to podcasts. Look for the Children's Hour.